Lake City, Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson.
Hello, and welcome to the USA Volleyball Show, the official podcast of USA Volleyball. And that's right, I'm back. Clarence, how are you doing?
You didn't even let me introduce you, man. That's crazy.
I was excited. I got to jump into it.
Been all practicing, you know, annoying the family, all that good stuff.
When I'm were you practicing in the mirror this morning? Is that
me?
Why you're?
Oh no, I said you've been practicing.
Oh yeah.
Thank you for this.
Yes.
I've been hanging in there. You know, we just wrapped up. I think part one of our budget season. Deadline, both been crazy there, and then, you know, coaching on the side like usual. So it's been pretty hectic. How have you been, dude? Welcome back to work. And, you know, not unless you haven't been working on your own stuff, you know. But what's new with you, man?
Yeah, a different kind of hectic over here in my world. I'm now officially a dad. My son Teller Jace was born August 14th. And it's been a wild ride. You know, we're you know, a little bit fighting for our lives over here. Me and my wife trying to get some sleep and taking care of the baby and doing our thing over here. But it's been a lot of fun, though. You know, even those late night bottle sessions with him, it's hard to be mad. You just look at him and you just smile and you just love it. And you're trying to soak in as much of that time as possible. And feels good to be back at work. A little bit bittersweet.
Nobody ever.
It's a little bit bittersweet, I'll admit, just because, you know, it's hard to, you know, I go 6 weeks just spending all my time with him and my wife. And now it's, now I've got to divide my focus back up again. And it's a little bit difficult, but luckily I do work from home, so I can go downstairs and see him when I want. But so I'm thankful for that. But it does feel good to be back at work doing this podcast. We did the interview last week with our guest today. And then yesterday, 1 a.m., I covered the men's national team match as they're competing in Tokyo. So that was a lot of fun. It worked out because the bottle sessions right around that time. Oh, yeah. So I got a little bit of sleep. Then I woke up for the bottle and we watched the game together. It was kind of fun.
Just spending quality time together already. I like
that. That's right. Yeah.
Sounds like you've been busy, man. Good job.
Yeah. A little busy, but it's been fun. Yeah. How about yourself? You said you've been coaching a lot. Any big wins in the coaching world for you?
Actually, yeah, we got a couple. We beat Maddington Springs for the first time in program history. And the Tuesday after that, we actually beat Woodland Park. So it was a
large little in-office rivalry there, huh? With Cassie.
I know, yeah. Cassie was upset. But a large Cassie come down and watched the game, cool. Too. It was a five-setter. We went back and forth.
Oh, fun.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, I think I did see some social media posts from that event. It was fun to follow that along and see that. I didn't know it went five sets. That's awesome.
Right. We were back and forth. It was stressful, but we pulled it out. And then we are officially at 7 wins this season. And
nice.
Fun fact, this program has never had 7 wins. So we're doing good things this year.
There we go. Moving up. Yeah.
A lot more games to play throughout the season. Hopefully we get to make the regionals and make some noise there. But I mean, we're on track to really do some good things this year that I've never been done in the program. So that's high school and club is club. So, you know, my boys team is also looking good. I'll be coaching the 16th team this year.
Oh, fun.
National. Nice. And we will be at Mountain Classic. Oh yeah, we were the first club to register for Mountain Classic. You know,
I was going to say you weren't the first club to register. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it wasn't either. I didn't register.
So it was got that early bird register.
No, I didn't do it. We registered. I'm out of that. I'm neutral. All fair game.
No, that's fun. Yeah, congratulations to you and your squads. That sounds like you're doing great and fun to see that the teams are improving too. That's fun.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
nice. Well, also want to say, you know, shout out, thank you to BJ and Severin for stepping in as guest hosts on the last two episodes. I did listen to them; they did great. A lot of great conversation in those two episodes. I'm bummed that I missed them, especially the last one with Taryn Cloth and Kristen Nuss. I haven't met them before, but it was fun to kind of get to know them a little bit through the episode. And Reed Pretty is always a great interview, a great conversation. So insightful.
You know, it's crazy. You said you were bummed you missed the episode, because I have this text message from you saying, I'm so glad I don't have to go to that 6 weeks. I have that here.
Did I send that to you?
I think so. Yeah. You sent that to wrong group chat. Wrong group chat.
Mm-hmm. It was just an autocorrect full sentence. I don't know what that was.
I'm kidding, guys. You can do that.
No, but those were great conversations. I really enjoyed hearing Reed talk about the 2016, leading up to 2016 Olympics, and kind of finding, you know, as the veteran who'd been to several Olympics before that, gold in 2008, as we all know, but trying to find his place on that younger squad. And as we all know now, after Rio, he did find his place. And as a leader in the locker room, a leader on the court, on the bench, and came in to help push the team to win bronze too, which was really cool, but awesome to hear him talk about that firsthand. Yeah. And then Kristen and Taryn's, when they were talking about their, you know, a relationship between beach partners, and that it's really like dating, and they have to, like, you know, set aside like date nights with each other to some quality time and not talk about work, not talk about the sand, and spend that quality time together. So that was a lot of fun. But hopefully later down the road, I'll get to meet them either through the podcast or an interview or in person, hopefully.
I'm going to bet it's going to be in person. I don't know why. I just
got it.
I'm feeling for you.
Love that. Love that. And they've been doing a lot of fun stuff recently, too, over on the ABP tour. And with the Atlanta Falcons, I believe they went to training camp for practice with them. That's so cool. Nice. Well, yeah, I just had to dump all that. Like, been gone so long. Yeah. a lot of fun. Great job on those episodes, Clarence. And then, of course, Severn and BJ as well.
Yeah. If you guys missed out on episode 74, like Steven just basically recapped, we sat down with both members of the U.S. Beach National Team pair. Again, if you don't know their nickname, Team TKN, Taryn and Kristen.
So cool.
Before they shipped out for world championships, they shared about what it was like transitioning from the collegiate world to the professional world. You hear Taryn talk about transitioning from indoor to beach. And we both talk about their partnership and friendship and sisterhood, too. Like Steven mentioned right here, too, it's like a, you know, almost like dating. You know, you really got to set that quality time aside and make sure that that bond is strong off the court going into, you know, that sand court there, too. But I mean, they also talk about their beach season on both the FIVB and ABP side of things and how they have a different approach for both. And depending on, you know, the goal and, you know, their aspirations there, too, it's a whole different mentality and mindset, which is actually really interesting, too. And this is just a really, really, really awesome episode. So you want to go back and listen to episode number 74 with Taryn and Kristen, or you can watch on USA Volleyball's YouTube channel.
Grab a quick drink of water, Clarence, because it's coming right back to you. I've been practicing this, you know, as part of my vocal warm-ups. I've been waiting, a long time to say this again.
1 a.m. bottle thing.
That's right. That's right. Now it's time for the news with Hughes.
And congratulations to the U.S. women's national team for punching their ticket to the 2024 Paris Olympic Games. Oh, yes. They're going to Paris. The U.S. men's national team started competition over the weekend in Japan to begin their FIVB men's road to Paris Olympic volleyball qualifier tournament. They're currently 2-0 at the time of this recording after defeating Egypt and Finland over the weekend. Keep it up, fellas. We are wishing you the best of luck. Also, another congratulations to last episode's guests, Taryn Cloth and Kristen Nuss, for winning the silver medal at the FIVB Beach Pro Tour Elite 16 Paris over the weekend. Hi, PK. How are you doing this morning?
Set him down.
Also, congratulations to Tim Brewster and Kyle Friend for winning gold at the 2023 Punta Cana Volleyball Classic, which is part of the Norseca Beach Volleyball Tour. Also, congratulations to Hagen Smith and Logan Weber for winning the bronze. Also, kudos to both pairs for bringing home some hardware.
should have taken you up on that drink of water.
Another congratulations to Lexi Denenberg and Molly Turner Shaw, who took home the silver medal, and to Corinne Quiggle and Sarah Schemmerhorn Murphy for bringing home the bronze medal at the 2023 Punta Cana Volleyball Classic. Love seeing all these medals coming home to U.S. soil. So keep it up, everybody. A reminder to all volleyball fans, Athletes Unlimited. That's right. AU starts their third season Friday. They will be competing in Mesa, Arizona from October 6th through November 6th at the Bell Bank Park in Mesa. Mark your calendars and get your tickets right now. If you can't make it in person, be sure to tune in. They'll be airing these matches on ESPN. Oh, yes. Follow along the action on USA Volleyball social medias, and for more on all the latest news, visit usavolleyball.org.
Grab your drink of water now, because it's my turn. Now, on to today's show. We sit down with Donnie Hui, a.k.a. you may all know him as Coach Donnie. Donnie is huge in the volleyball community, from coaching, playing, training, jumping, YouTube, content creating. He wears a lot of hats. He does it all. Coach Donnie has been competing in USA Volleyball's Open National Championship for several years now. Clarence, you tell a great story about meeting him at the Opens too, with his team Tall Ones. But you got to listen to the interview for that. Coach Donnie runs a successful strength training, jump training, volleyball training organization called Elevate Yourself, runs a YouTube channel in association with that. And he shares training videos, tips, even does some IQ reaction videos, the anime, volleyball anime. So a lot of stuff there, a lot of great content. But let's jump right into it. Enough from us. Here is Coach Donnie. That backdrop.
Oh, no, show off.
There's Lee.
Yeah. This is my home studio where I work now. So trying to still slowly fill up the walls with other inspirational things. But this is the background for a lot of my videos.
I love the big Linsanity poster and the jersey underneath that. That's sick.
Thank you. Some OG stuff.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Bruce Lee up there. Is that right?
Yep. Bruce Lee.
Yep.
Yeah, he's probably my biggest inspiration. And then some of my favorite anime there, and then all the Lin jerseys, and then that's my VLA jersey down there.
Excellent.
So got some more stuff going up soon.
What are some of those anime artworks right there?
Well, Street Fighter. So one of my favorite video games. So that's actually the artwork from that, from all of the series of that. And then that's Goku. So Dragon Ball Z.
Nice.
And then my YouTube plaque, and then all the different volleyballs I'd played with. Actually, that one right there. You guys would appreciate this, because, you know, it's hard to talk international volleyball with people in the U.S. because no one knows what the heck.
Oh, who's that really? Matt Anderson. Who is that? Who is that guy? He's really cute. I'm like, dude, he's one of the best players in the world.
Literally.
Yeah. So in 2008, I went to San Jose State. And I played for the club team there. And that was when they were processing all the teams. Uh-huh. And I was working at Sunglass Hut, like just a retail job in college. And one of my friends who works in the event staff said, hey, the USA team's practicing right now. So I asked my manager if I can leave to go watch them. So she said, sure, you're fine. So I snuck into the practice, and Hugh McCutcheon was coaching. And I snuck into the practice, and he was not very happy about that. He saw me sitting there. He's like, what are you doing here? He's like, I'm with that guy. And then so at the end of the practice, the first person that came up to me was Marv Dunphy. And he said, welcome to our USA practice. Glad you're here. And all the USA guys proceeded to come up, and I had my volleyball there, and they all signed it. So this is from 2008. But it was really just like a great testament to USA just how welcoming everyone was. And then like Reed Pretty stayed and talked to me for 30 minutes afterward, and Riley Salmon. So it's a great organization, you know, and I really, it was just a very life-changing moment for me. So really lucky to have everyone's autograph, except for Hugh. He didn't want to sign this.
He's still mad at you.
I bet. I just see him at the VNL though, and he seems to have chilled out a little bit in his retirement.
We did just have him on the podcast not that long ago. And yeah, he did mention, yeah, that Coach Donnie guy who snuck into my practice. Yeah, still not happy with him.
I'll never forgive
him. Yeah, I was surprised he would say that. Let me put this back in.
Yeah. What a way to start the podcast episode here. That's awesome. Well, let's jump right in. Donnie, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. I'm excited to get to know a little bit more about you, learn about you. We just kind of kicked off the episode dissecting your backdrop here. And I'm sure that's going to little pieces of that's going to come up throughout the interview. So I'm excited to talk to you about that, especially about the anime pieces, because I just watched your episode one haiku reactions. I'm excited to talk to you about that. I didn't want to start with the latest ones because I'm avoiding spoilers. I'm only like, I think it's season two, maybe. Okay. So I wanted to watch that first one and learned a little bit more about you too and that. So let's just jump right in and get to know you. You wear many hats. You're a volleyball coach, a strength trainer, jump trainer, YouTube star. You do reaction videos to Haikyuu, coaching videos, volleyball player. I could go on and on, motivational speaker. And I learned in that episode one reactions video that you're an art teacher as well. So love to hear more about your background and just more about you.
Yeah, thanks. Well, appreciate you having me on the USA podcast. It's been really special for all the people in the US. It's really hard to have access to just our international players because volleyball is not a big sport in our country. And so to have a media outlet for you guys to connect us with our national team players and coaches and just to grow the game in our country. So I appreciate what you guys are doing. So a little bit of background about myself. I grew up playing a lot of sports, but I was never really good at it. So I would say I credit a lot of my current success to how I was raised. My parents actually, they were born in China. But that was during the revolution. So civil war, famine, I mean, pretty extreme stuff. And then the Japanese occupation, which was pretty brutal at the time. So they escaped China and then they moved to Hong Kong, which was under British rule at the time. So they grew up there, but they didn't grow up very well off. They really had to work for everything. And then they came here for university. And so they were able to have better opportunities here in California. And so that's how I was born here. And the reason why that's important to my story is because I think every time I had a difficulty in life, whether I got cut from a sports team or didn't start, which was actually very often, like I think every sports team I played on, I was probably one of the worst athletes. I remember playing street hockey for a YMCA league, and I was definitely the person that didn't score any goals. And they just relegated me to goalie just because I couldn't do anything else, even though goalie is a pretty important position. But, and then I remember being on the sixth grade track team at my elementary school, and I was last place in every event. But I love sports, and I was very fortunate to have adults in my life, like my PE teacher, Mr. Elio, my parents, my cousins, a lot of adults in my life that just encouraged me to continue to play if I loved it. I can't imagine if an adult told me that you should stop playing sports because you're not good at it. And how that would have changed the course of my life. So I got cut from the seventh grade team, the eighth grade basketball team, and the ninth grade basketball team. And our school wasn't even that good. So I got cut from teams that weren't even that good, but I just loved basketball so much. And if I didn't get cut from the ninth grade basketball team, I would have never tried out for volleyball my sophomore year. And that's what ended up happening. And only reason why I made the volleyball team is because our volleyball team was worse than our basketball team, and they didn't make cuts. So I just got on the team. And once again, I sat the bench for 2 years. And I remember complaining to my mom. It's like, yeah, I didn't get a lot of playing time. Whatever, the coach doesn't like me. And then she always said, well, you can either work harder or you just try another sport. And, you know, I think unfortunately, the most common message I hear from a lot of parents nowadays is, let's have a meeting with the coach. Why aren't you playing my son or daughter more? And we know that really handicaps people for life, right? The ability to fight for what you want and to earn what you want in spite of any challenges that you might have in the way. And yeah, maybe the coach doesn't like you. Yeah, maybe the teammates don't like you, whatever it is. But I'm really fortunate. It was frustrating at the time as a young person, but I'm really fortunate that my parents just never let me use that as an excuse. So senior year, I finally got my chance to play, and I ended up doing really well. And then after that, I played club at San Jose State, and then kind of just grew as a volleyball player there. And I had a lot of volleyball mentors in my life. I had this one person named Daniel Kwan. He was a local guy who played for the UC Berkeley club team, but he kind of took me under my wing, and it was another adult in my life. He was 4 years older. So someone who was older that mentored me, and I really taught me how to play the game, but also just believed in what I could do. And I kind of modeled my life after that. And then through him, I got connected to meet with other really great coaches. Brett, who is the head coach for Archbishop Mitty, so in California. So he had like a huge run, 10 consecutive state championships. So really, really great coach. And I also had a chance to meet John Dunning through another volleyball friend, former Stanford coach, 5 championships. So really great coach from there. And so that's kind of how I got involved in the game. And I started actually getting into coaching when I graduated from high school. I went to a community college, and for those who go to community college, there's just not a lot going on. It's mainly commuter schools. And so after class, you either go to McDonald's or you go home. That's like the highlight, right? So I lived at home, and fortunately that meant I had a lot of free time. And my coach called me up and said, "You want to help out with our team?" And I accidentally fell into coaching. So at first, for me, my goal was to show the underclassmen, because I was a freshly graduated senior, right? My goal was to show all the other people that I was still a great player and that, yes, I'm still the best on the team, even though I'm not on the team anymore. But then it evolved into people asking me how to do things. And I think that was the first time I had to really think about that. And so when someone would ask me, how do I pass? I'd have to go home and say, let me get back to you because I got to think about how I pass. And so I'll come back. I'll share them a few tips. Well, this is how I do it. You can try it out. And then when they got better, it was such a gratifying feeling. And I got addicted to that feeling and eventually started coaching more. And then that's kind of how dictated my career initially. At that time, I was studying electrical engineering at college. I thought I wanted to be an engineer, but I fell in love with working with young people and coaching that I changed my whole trajectory to be an art teacher. And growing up, I've always done art. It was kind of my first love before sports, actually. So it kind of was a great fit. I didn't enjoy engineering, so I went to art, and I realized that the best way for me to be a coach at that time was to be a teacher. The hours worked really well together, and I ended up coaching and teaching at the same school. So that's how I became an art teacher. And then for the YouTube channel, at the same time, I was also growing my personal training business. And that kind of started off in the same way, where I'd be working out, at the gym, and I'd be dunking a basketball and doing like really high box jumps as part of my training. And people would ask me, like, how do you jump so high? And I would say, well, this is what I do for my training. Why don't you try it out? And then they would come back and say, yeah, it really helped out. Or they would say, like, it's too hard. Forget about it. but that became also another gratifying feeling for me to help people increase their vertical jump. Because for me, I was never that athletic. When I was a senior, my vertical jump was 26 inches. And I remember a lot of the players on the girls volleyball team jumped a lot higher than me. They were getting like high 20s, low 30s. So I was able to increase my vertical jump from 26 to 40 inches in about 6 years.
Wow.
So kind of that story has been a big part of my journey to inspire other people to achieve great things with their body. And then that's how I started my company, Elevate Yourself. And only reason why I started making videos is because I wanted to make videos to help my clients. And instead of answering the same question 1,000 times, I say, why don't you watch this video and see if you can get something from it. And then originally it was just purely jump training, but I was started using volleyball clips to demonstrate jumping technique. And then people were asking for volleyball content. And then that kind of blew up from there. So that's kind of like the whole story of my careers, and Elevate Yourself.
it seems like all this kind of, I don't want to say started kind of steamrolling in conjunction, you know, to each other. But, you know, how do you balance and manage all that? And, you know, not only track the progress and the growth with all the hats that you wear there, but how do you stay motivated through all that?
Yeah, I would say I'm a pretty, growing up, I had trouble focusing. And I think I originally I would get disciplined in class, not like spanked in class, but I remember the most common comment in my report card. This is when report cards were still physical.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys grew up in
that. Hated walking home, taking the home to your parents.
You get your report card again? No, I don't really.
That's right. Yeah. Ask your friend to sign it off because you're right. People don't even do signatures anymore. But I remember the most common report card was gets easily distracted. And, you know, my parents would just be pretty hard on me and say, you got to focus in school, learn how to sit still. And so growing up, I thought that my short attention span was a weakness. But as I grew older, I've learned that it's just my brain needing a lot of things to happen for me to stay focused. And so the way I'm able to manage all that is I try to make sure I'm working on multiple things at once. And I don't think that works for everybody, but I think my mind needs multiple things to keep it calm. And so, you know, being a teacher, running leagues, coaching clinics and things like that, like for me, that's how I stay focused. And then, and I live and die by my schedule. And that's something I picked up in college where instead of doing homework, instead of just saying homework, I would say, I mean, from 8 to 8:30, I'm doing physics, 8:30 to 9, I'm doing math and whatever. So that's pretty much how I schedule it. And then now luckily I don't need a lot of sleep. So I sleep around six and a half to 7 hours a night. You know, it looks like, seems like most people need about 8 or 9. So I just naturally wake up early too. And so I think the morning is pretty much where I get most of my stressful work done. But yeah, scheduling is probably the only way. And then also just naturally being very mentally hyperactive. I think if I don't have a lot of things going on, then that's when I don't get a lot done.
I want to go back to kind of your beginnings of the volleyball. What was it about the sport, about volleyball, that really hooked you?
You know, honestly, the first part that hooked me was it was just one of the few sports teams that I actually made. Mm-hmm. And I was like fiercely competitive. And honestly, do you guys coach at all?
Clarence does.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm sure you've worked with athletes. Like the multi-sport athletes are awesome because you give them a checkerboard, they're going to want to win. Like you first one to go to Taco Bell and order, like they want to win at that too. Right. And so I was that kid where I hated losing, but unfortunately I didn't have the tools to win at a lot of things, but my desire didn't change. And so I think volleyball was just one of the luckiest sports that I had to experience that I could win at something. And because our team wasn't that strong and our league wasn't that strong, I had more chances to win. I think if I would grew up in SoCal, Southern California, for people who aren't from here, I don't think I would stay interested because I think I would lose a lot just being very physically limited. And so that gave me the confidence to, like, you know, that maybe this is a sport that I can actually stick with. And I think because it gave a lot of opportunities for aggression compared to sports like billiards or, I don't know, cross country. There's not a lot of aggression in those sports, but I think just being able to smash something and then also being able to go all out for something. So like I did a lot of martial arts growing up and you have to be very controlled. I mean, yes, it is a very aggressive sport. But if you're not tight on your punches, you can't do a wild hail maker, right? If you're not tight on your punches, you're going to lose the match. But in volleyball, you can go all out for a dig. And it just feels so good to just put your whole body. You feel like a hero. And when you have a huge block, sometimes I'm not even thinking about my arm swing mechanics. I'm like, I'm going to break some fingers because the 6'7" guy, I'm either going to get housed or I'm going to get a really big tool. So let's just go for it. And so I think these all out moments is what really attracts me to the volleyball.
Yeah, you said, you know, the aggression of volleyball, the physicality of volleyball. On the surface, you see that, you know, as a first time viewer, a fan of volleyball. But then you can dive in, you know, a layer deeper and a layer deeper. And like you mentioned, control comes into volleyball quite a bit. And, you know, both on the defensive and offensive sides, setting as well. And you can really, you know, dig deep and find, you know, a new layer of volleyball that you had, you know, that you don't see as a viewer, but as you begin to play it, it opens up and you know, see the court differently. You see your blockers that you're attacking against differently. And you can really, you know, have some fun and be creative on the volleyball court. So yeah, I loved hearing you kind of talk about, you know, the initial passion of just making the volleyball team, but then diving a little bit deeper and finding that love for it.
Yeah. Touched on it a little bit as you were kind of talking about your introduction to coaching, but sort of the same question here. I mean, you know, what got you hooked on coaching? I think it was a little bit of when you were talking about how, you know, you had to go back and, you know, look at your own techniques, and then you started to apply that to, you know, the people who wanted to ask those questions and, you know, get better on your end, on their end. But can you elaborate on that a little bit more?
Yeah, I would say what got me into coaching, I remember even as a young kid, for some reason, I just had this like deep desire. I got bullied a lot as a kid, and some was just normal family dynamic bullying. Like I had an older brother that would sit on my face and fart in my face and, like, you know, stuff like that. Pretty standard, unfortunate older brother stuff. And now we're actually really close. The funny thing is he's a pastor now. He's actually amazing.
Oh, that's great.
Like the stories I have for you guys.
Yeah. But older cousins would pick on me. But then there were also moments where there's just some really big douchebags in school that just would just find a reason to, at that time when I wasn't as confident and I wasn't as strong in myself, that would just bully me. And I remember thinking, like, if I was ever in a position of influence, I remember specifically, it was my sophomore year, actually, these guys from the football team were just like, find me in the locker room and would just find reasons to shove me. One of my friends, who's shorter than me, but he has a fourth degree black belt in Taekwondo, he was a good friend of mine, and he saw me, and then he kind of stood up for me and he said, "Why are you picking on him?" And then they were about to shove him, and he back kicked one of them in the stomach. I mean, this guy's like a 6'4" big dude. So then he's on the ground, and then they never messed with me after that. You know, luckily my friend stood up for me. But I remember, like, in moments like that, it's like, man, if I'm ever able to do that for somebody, to stand up for somebody or inspire somebody, that's going to be my calling. I want to do that. And luckily along the way, as I kind of gained more confidence, coaching kind of became that way to inspire people. And I've used volleyball to me, it's a language to help people become the best versions of themselves. And for me, being a weaker player and being bullied and just kind of having that backstory, I think for me, not just helping someone become better at the sport, but empowering someone to be confident in themselves. Because, you know, in sports, you have those moments where you feel like you're helpless, or you feel like there's some odds that you just can't overcome. And so coaching somebody to a moment where they can overcome these perceived shortcomings, or this opponent that they've never, you know, overcome, or, and, you know, in some worse circumstances, when a team is talking trash to you or just not treating with respect, like, what do you do in those situations? And so to me, that's kind of like my deeper gratification for coaching is really empowering people to be confident, to be strong in their lives off the court as well.
Steven, I think you're muted.
I am muted. There we go. I think that's the perfect segue into kind of talking about your business, Elevate Yourself, your passion for coaching, inspiring others, like you said, empowering others to believe in themselves, be confident in themselves. That kind of all comes into play into Elevate Yourself. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and kind of what goes into that business?
Yeah. When I formed Elevate Yourself in 2013, I was at that time teaching actually drum lessons. I was teaching art lessons. So I was doing a lot of different things, but I knew if I wanted to grow a business, I had to narrow things down to just one aspect. And so I wanted to pursue the training and coaching business in volleyball, but I didn't want to, I think even at that time I was in my 20s. I didn't want it to just be about volleyball, even though the outside was going to be volleyball results, like jumping higher, moving faster, hitting harder, being better at the sport. To me, the core message was, I want to allow people to be the best versions of themselves. That's kind of been the theme. But calling my company that was just too long. Become the best version of yourself, right? But it is very jump focused. And for me, one of the most life-changing story experiences for me was increasing my vertical jump. I remember when we did our vertex measurements in senior year of high school, it was pretty depressing to know that I had one of the lowest verticals on the team. Like our libero had a higher vertical than me. Luckily I was just a little bit smarter player and a little bit more confident in what I did. And that's why I succeeded, but it wasn't because of my physical ability. And I remember asking one of my teammates who had a natural 40-inch standing vertical, this guy would come in flip-flops, like the Jordan Nike flip-flops, stand under the rim and, you know, shorts below his knees, like OG baller status back then.
Yeah.
And would just do a standing jump, grab the rim, and then land. And I asked him one time, I said, how do you jump so high? He said, I don't know. I just do it. Yeah, I just do. And like, it's how you say it that can really inspire somebody or discourage somebody. Cause the way he said it was like, why are you even asking me? Like, you don't belong. You don't deserve to ask me. If he said like, I don't know. I know. I just do. Like if he said it like that, then it's like, oh, okay. Maybe there's something else. And so I just thought I was just destined to be just not the best athlete. And I thought if you're either born with it or not, but that year, luckily, I had a chance to have an English class with a guy named Alex Ruiz, who is the founder of Hoopsphere. Shout out to them if you're in the Bay Area. And he was a 5'8" guy, Lebanese guy, and he could dunk a basketball.
Wow.
And we bonded over our love for Ice Cube, the rapper. So we had a love for hip hop in the English class, and we would just talk shop. And I asked him, like, how do you jump so high? He's like, well, you got to lift weights. So he invited me to the gym, 24-hour fitness, and showed me some things to jump higher. It was just really basic things like squats, shoulder raises. But I think for me, that was the first time that I realized that you can actually influence your destiny, that you're not stuck with what you're born with, that what you're born with is a starting point, but what you do with what you're born with is the big focus. And so that created a 6-year journey of me diving deep into research. At that time, there was YouTube, but it was before it was bought out by Google. So it wasn't like this huge library of amazing information. Mm-hmm. I actually had to go to the Martin Luther King Library at San Jose State, take out these slides from like Vanderbilt University, Fullerton, which were like the leading athletic performance researchers. And then I also had to take like transcriptions from Soviet literature, which a lot of our exercise science is based off of Soviet athletics, exercise science. So I'd have to like take these interpretive studies and test them on myself to see if they worked. So 6 years of that, just diving deep into research and testing, I was able to increase my vertical jump. And so that was kind of like the core inspiration behind the name Elevate Yourself. I wanted it to still feel like it's about vertical jump improvement, because to me, that was a very life-changing experience. But then how do I communicate that to something beyond just training, that you can elevate yourself in any aspect of your life? So I felt like Elevate Yourself was just a good way to combine both the performance aspect, but also the life aspect as well.
Where were you in 2004 when I was trying to make my sophomore year basketball team?
I was a freshman in college, going to community college. Were you in Colorado at the time?
No, I was in Dallas. I'm from Dallas originally, but I was probably, I don't know, 5'6" at the time. Only have grown 3 inches since then. I got cut from my basketball team. Basketball was my passion, like you, but I got cut from my basketball team and ended up going full time into soccer. But that was, you know, what my coach told me was, you know, I was a little too short. My other teammates had their growth spurts. And, you know, freshman year, I was like one of the tallest, and then they all grew and I did not. But luckily I did have a big passion in soccer, so I just kind of went full time into soccer from there. But would have loved to have you around to jump train me and get my vertical up.
Would have loved that too. You know, that just inspired another story. I think what coaches tell players is it just has so much weight, for better or for worse. And when I went to San Jose State, so the college club scene in California is pretty competitive. We've actually beat some local universities. I'm not gonna name who, but like when we have our preseason scrimmages, so the like either NIA or NCAA. So we've pretty strong circuit in California, and the group of friends that I played volleyball with in high school that were around my height, like between 5'10" and like 5'8" to 6 feet. A lot of them went to UC Davis and Cal Poly. And then for me, I went to San Jose State. And at that time, and this is not a knock on their coach, like I understand when coaches believe that, hey, if you're taller, you're going to have a higher chance of success in the front row. That's just facts. But I think to tell somebody that you can't do something because of these limitations, I think it's up to, who was it? Doug Beal, I think, wrote an open letter to parents. Because he gets emails, he used to get emails a lot on saying, is my kid tall and too short for this position? My club coach keeps telling my daughter she's too short, blah, blah, blah. And then he essentially wrote the open letter saying, don't let a coach dictate, like if the position should be based on need, not necessarily on height. Let us at the international level decide, you know, if you're going to be shorter or taller. But, you know, and so anyways, that's a whole other thing. But I appreciate that letter from Doug Beal. So in Davis, I remember we'd hang out and they would tell me that, yeah, I have to play back row because the coach isn't too short. And for me, I went to San Jose State and I had a coach named Ron Whitmill, who was 6'4", but he just understood the game, in my opinion, at a deeper level. And I remember him saying we had a pool of six outside hitters ranging from 6'5" to me. I was the shortest one at 5'10". And he's pretty much said, if you can score and pass, you're going to be an outside hitter. That was his requirement. And so when we would do these competitive drills, I would usually finish in top three, top two. So I would start about 70 or 80% of the time. And so I was the shortest outside hitter in an entire league in Northern California. And then and when we play UC Davis, those guys were huge. They ran a 6'2". So the opposites were 6'6 and 6'4. Middles were 6'9 and 6'8. This is a club team, by the way.
Yeah.
And they were giants, but I remember we beat them in five. And to me, connecting that experience of being the shortest outsider on the court simply because a coach gave me an opportunity to beat a team where the coach told people that you're too short to play front row. And I remember we would eat dinner after the game because we had a lot of friends on UC Davis, and we're just asking like what happened in the game. And one of the players told me that the coach was getting so frustrated. I had 22 kills that game. Mm-hmm. And I was hitting like a 60% clip, and the coach was so frustrated. Like, why can't you just block him? He's so short. Just block him. And my coach, he would coach us all different ways. For me, he's like, you tool or you hit that deep corner. But you, and then for this, the other outsider was 6'3", he said, go over people. You need to hit over people. You have the ability to hit over people. And so it was really fascinating for me to hear him give different feedback to us because we had different abilities and different heights. I forgot what the original question was. Oh, it was just a story that you inspired.
Yeah, just a story you had. Yeah, I love that. Coaching the player and, you know, their skill set and really focusing on that. That's what being a great coach is. You know, you can't coach height, but you can coach their natural ability or their ability that they've worked on. So yeah, that's awesome. Love that story.
Yeah. I do a lot of coaching at the high school and club level too, boys and girls. And then I also just took over an entire high school program. So like we're definitely on the come up. We're the underdogs because historically we've always been, you know, everyone's senior night, everyone's homecoming, everyone's like easy win. And you know, we're definitely turning things around this season. But just a total side note here, I sparked a story on my end is, I do capture a lot of your content and apply it to my coaching curriculum. And this is even, you know, before I met you at Oakland, this is even before, you know, just this conversation we're having right now there too, because I just love the way you break down the game in detail and the way you're able to, you know, articulate things that motivate that, you know, real time, that real life experience. And you're talking about, you know, being a smaller outside hitter, being able to tool and utilize a block and use your resources and abilities that you have to, you know, to shock the taller blockers who aren't really expecting that. Hey, everything from there to diving techniques to, you know, rotational breakdowns. It's a lot of valuable content that you have too. And, you know, partly, you know, just want to say thanks to that, man. I really appreciate, you know, just everything you built overall. It really helps people.
Thank you. Thanks for using my videos and thanks. That's really kind of you to say.
Also, before we move on to the next question, funny story open sea. So after we did meet, you guys are getting ready to play and I'm at my team until soon warming up. And they were like, oh my God, like that's Donnie. They were just all distracted. Like it was during our warm-up time too. They just like totally stopped and just like was just totally mesmerized by your new team of tall ones and just they all wanted to meet you and stuff. Just isn't that cool? And then
that's cool.
I think you dapped somebody up and he can't miss. Oh my God, he dapped me up. You're like just a legend to that team. It was so cool to see and experience that too. So just some good times there.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
But I think
go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead.
Hey, you're good. Go
ahead. I don't know where you were going. I didn't know if you're going to jump topics, but it, before we leave, you know, talking about elevate yourself for, you know, a viewer, someone who's wanting to learn from your content, where do they start with Elevate Yourself? Is it an email to you or, you know, what piece of content would you send to them first? Where do they start?
It depends on what they're learning at that time. I would say the most common emails I get is vertical jump and spiking confidence. So I think the bulk of my audience are kind of on the undersized spectrum. And so I just send them via links to jumping technique. Like for me, I technique is the way I would define it is getting a better result with less effort and less injury. Because you can go straight into box jumps and bounding and shock jumps and things like that. And you can get like an immediate improvement, but it's a very fast way to get injured. And so technique is a great way. The first thing we actually do when I train clients is I teach them how to land properly. Because as a trainer, my main job is to make sure you don't get injured. Because what's the point of training hard if you're going to hurt yourself, right? So that's my big focus then. And then when people ask about skills, I usually have kind of like what you just mentioned, just videos about spiking technique. Actually for my coach, Ron Whitmill, my high school coach was pretty old school. She played college in the 80s. And so the techniques back in those days was more about arching and piking. And so you can get a good amount of power, but it's a lot of strain on the back and the shoulder. And so when I had tons of shoulder and back injuries, and I thought that was a badge of honor. Unfortunately, the sports environment for me growing up was like the injury was like, yeah, I got tape on my hand or like, yeah, I had shoulder surgery. Like, what do you got type of thing? And I was like, wait, I should have looked back and think, that should be concerning.
Your battle scars. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it, like, my coach actually had two shoulder surgeries, and everyone, all the guys, we thought she was such a badass because she's like, dude, she must hit the crap out of the ball, which she did. And when I was in college, Ron Whitmill taught me how to open up and hit with more torque. And magically, my lower back and my shoulder pain went away. So for me, that's why technique is so important, because not only do you get more out of your performance, but you get so much less injury and you could play for longer. And you guys have been to USA adult nationals, like watching the 80-year-olds play. Like that's my goal.
Yeah.
As it can, they have well.
That. If I could do that,
they can.
And I'm living
life. That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's our goal. All three of us, we need to play against each other in the 70s division.
That's going to be awesome.
We got to start these ages, man.
Yes. Yep.
And a lot of them, they've come up through just, you know, 40s, 45s, all the way up to 70s. Man, it's inspiring.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the best part about Opens, is just seeing, you know, the different levels, the different age divisions, and really seeing volleyball as a lifelong sport firsthand. Yeah.
So, I was going to segue into a little bit about your high school team, but I mean, I think this Opens conversation kind of sparked its own segue. But I mean, just talk about your team, the Tall Ones. How long have you guys been coming to Open the competing?
2017 was our very first year. And I went to Opens a couple times with some of the college alumni, like playing in the double B. And, but so the backstory behind the Tall Ones is that, even as an adult, after college, I still craved high level competition, but I was always get recruited as a libero, and I can play libero, but it's not a position that excites me. Like I love to hit, I love the battle, and I love the fact that I get to test myself against bigger blockers. I think that's just kind of I think growing up kind of with like older cousins, and my older brother always keeping me down. I'm just used to fighting up all the time. And so that's like a situation I feel very comfortable in. Uh-huh. So my other friend, Josh Barina, who's the other outside, one of the original members of the Tall Ones, he also wouldn't get a lot of priority as a hitter. You know, people would try to recruit him as a passer, even though he's a great hitter. And so we kind of formed that team saying, well, if no one's going to recruit us as a hitter, then we need to make our own team. We need to make our own experience because no one else is going to believe in us. And so we pretty much had a bunch of other guys that were pretty much the last pick on a lot of other people's sub list. And so we formed that team, and it was kind of a last minute name. And I was thinking, well, what do we call ourselves? And to me, it was just because we were not that tall, let's just call ourselves the Tall Ones. And it just kind of became a name of irony. And immediately within 2017, our first year, I think we developed a very unique brand of volleyball, of just going all out. There's some still one of the most memorable games against Supple Leopards, beautiful name. And one of the teammates took a picture of me standing like at the campus meeting, and my head is up to his shoulder.
I love that.
You can even hear like, so my camera is behind the baseline of the bench, and you actually hear some people saying they don't know that they're being recorded, their voice. They're saying like, oh, these guys are going to get smashed just purely off the look. And I don't blame them. Like on paper, yeah, we should lose on paper. If you're shorter and you're not as dynamic as the other team, then, you know, on paper, they should beat us. And so we just had a lot of those moments in those games where we are beating teams that should beat us on paper. And that kind of became our brand of just the underdog style of play for the Tall Ones.
What we just talked about, you know, watching the 80-year-old divisions and the 70-year-old divisions. What's your favorite part about the Open Nationals, the USA Volleyball Open Nationals?
It is, you know, it's the highlight of the year where all the other volleyball junkies get in one building. And it's just as much as fun playing as it is watching and meeting people like Clarence and, you know, other people from all divisions. Hi, Kitty.
This is PK.
He likes PK
on calls. PK, you're a big boy. Yeah, I think just being in the atmosphere where you'd like very few opportunities. It's hard enough to find people to talk volleyball with, but when you're there, it's normal. You know, you play, a lot of people coach, then you go out to dinner and you talk more volleyball. Then you go back to the hotel room, then you talk more volleyball. And you think you're trying to sleep, you think you're going to sleep at nine, but you just watch for volleyball on YouTube, right?
Yeah.
And that's just normal.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best part. And then I think also watching the older divisions, like, it's really inspiring. It's not as common now, but when some of the former Olympians would play in the 40s, watching the Canadian and Brazilian and USA Olympians go at it at 40 or 50 years old, like people that I watch on TV, Lloyd Ball, Reed Pretty,
yeah,
those guys to still play. And then watching the camaraderie, like in the 70s and 80s, the way they shake their hands in the beginning of the game, it's like, yeah, we've been playing against each other for 30 years, and this is a beautiful thing. Like watching Brazil play US in the 70s division and just the camaraderie they have. But they are the dirtiest division, man. They go over on one. They're like, yeah, these guys, they're not diving a lot at that age. They know it. They go over on one and two a lot, and they're just shooting deep corner because they know no one's going to hit the floor.
Do you have a favorite memory from, you know, either watching, you know, some of the divisions that you like to watch, or the former Olympians that you like to watch there, or even, you know, as a player, any favorite memories you have from competing at Opens?
Oh, yeah. This is when Pineapple was still competing, and this is when they had PVL. Which, sad to see that go away. But there's this one play where Lloyd Ball is running beyond left back corner.
I think I know exactly what you're talking about.
On set.
Yeah.
And Jeff Patak goes in for a bomb. And to see that live, and this is like pre-social media, and just seeing those moments. So that's probably my favorite one of USA. And then my other favorite one was the game, I would say actually beating Supple Leopards. That kind of made just a really great, I think it was just very validating. I think because, you know, when I was forming that team, yes, I wanted to create a team where I could play outside hitter, but in the back of my mind, I was still wondering like, well, maybe the other people are right. Maybe I don't get asked because I'm not an influential outside hitter. Maybe I should be a libero. But I couldn't quiet that burning desire inside of me that I feel destined to be a hitter. So to know that I was able to succeed as an outside hitter at that level, I think was very validating for me to let you know, maybe I should continue to listen to my heart. And yeah, so those are probably the two most memorable.
Love that.
Yeah, I'm always being asked to play middle on all the teams around the tournaments in Colorado and such there too. And you know, I like to hit, like to be an outsider, right side too. But middle's just.
But he really wants to be a libero.
Do you tend to set a lot too? Do you do purposely block the setter, get in their way to set a couple balls?
Not all the time, but when I do set, it's very unexpectedly. I don't have the best hands, but I tend to focus and. Not mess up. So I actually get asked back to play here and there too. But yeah, it's hard to find a solidified team out here like you guys got too. But, you know, that's part of the process of the journey.
Hey, you should form your own team one day. Be an outside hitter, I'm an outside hitter on this team.
We're talking about it for Columbus in 2024. Hope to see you guys there for sure. But
yeah, we'll be there.
Yeah. All right. But, you know, just talking about, you know, Opens and this past year in Dallas, and you would totally not offend me with any, you know, with your answer here. But I mean, what are some things that you feel could have been, you know, either done better or, you know, what are some improvements you'd like to see, you know, to the tournament overall moving into 2024? I know COVID, the pandemic, you know, hit a lot and, you know, the Opens back on a, you know, rebuild status there, but there is growth. So, you know, it was just, you know, conversations I love to have with people.
Yeah, definitely. We appreciate you being open to receive some of the feedback. One, I still think it's run really well. I think I appreciate the standard that you guys keep, meaning if you don't have certain jersey requirements, if you don't show up on time, there's actual penalties. because we've all been to, unfortunately, volleyball tournaments have more of a reputation of being too laid back. Mm-hmm. You start 2 hours later, then people complain about staying late.
And retro stuff,
right? It's like, well, if you're going to complain about it, then why don't you show up earlier, right? So USA really enforces a very professional standard. Rosters are checked, things like that. So I think that is a really, really key foundation. Couple errors, just through the registration process, because I do want to see Opens grow. Like, I wanted to go beyond 300 teams again. And I think it has potential. Like, volleyball is growing so much. More club teams are opening up. We have more women's and men's programs opening up. So there's more people to play after college. I think this registration process might be the biggest barrier. Mm-hmm. It's the website is just a little clunky, and it takes too many clicks to get to where you need. And I would say to get the new generation in there, just making it more streamlined and easier to pay and register would be probably the biggest change I would make. And the interface. Do both of you guys coach club, or is it just you, Clarence?
Just me.
Okay. Yeah. And like, even as a coach, the club systems here, I feel like volleyball software is purposely difficult to use sometimes.
I agree. There's so many, like, you know, we use AES, and then you have others that use like TMG sign, and there's Sport Ranch, and there's just like so many different, just complicated. I hear you. I definitely hear you coming from.
Yeah. And there was a local tournament where it was run by someone who just happened to be a programmer. Mm-hmm. And he just coded his own thing where they had automatic SMS updates seeing this game is over, go to court so-and-so. So if I'm a team rep, at the minimum, I have my cell number registered for that team. And so they also devised a system where at the end of each match, I keep the score on my phone. And when it's done, I bring it to the captains. They both check off, and then it sends it directly to the headquarters. And then once that gets confirmed, meaning both captains are said this is the right score, then a text message gets sent to the next round saying your team is on this court right now, warm up, blah, blah, blah. So it just does the thinking for them and it streamlines things. Traditionally, you have to write it down on paper, walk it all the way to the tournament desk. And I just think it would save a lot of downtime. So if there's a way that USA Volleyball could develop a simpler system that allows people to use their phones, and I think phones could be a really powerful tool like that. And then I would say the other improvements could be in the format. I know it's tough because every year you don't know how many teams are going to be registering. And so the number of teams determines the format. But I think it would be interesting to crowdsource some of this info. So as soon as that information is determined, and I know some people might register last minute, but just say we have 21 teams, 3 days. If you have a suggestion on format, submit this. And I think taking more crowdsourcing info on someone that might have a great idea, I think would allow people to take more ownership of like, hey, USA took my feedback. You know, maybe I want to invest more in this. Because running my own tournaments, I could have operated two ways. And traditionally, people don't ask for feedback because one, it's hard to hear feedback, especially because majority of the feedback is going to be constructive. But what I found is that I have more loyal teams that register sooner and more frequently.
Yep.
When I tell them that, hey, how can I make it better for you? And I tell them outright, like, I might not apply all your feedback, but I value your experience and I want to make it better for you. And that creates so much more loyalty from people. And I think that would be a great way for USA to build the tournament is through rewarding the loyal teams that want to come back and making them feel valued. Because then they're going to want to spread the word and say, you should join USA because it's a great experience.
Yeah. I think I'm going to follow up with you on that on that crowdsourcing one, too. I think I'll send a separate email so we can touch base on some, you know, suggested questions or, you know, however we want to navigate that, too. But I do love that idea. And then also I'm going to take that that SMS idea. I think that can be applied to
all of our qualifiers and championship.
Yeah.
And I helped out those teams a lot too. So, hey, you might have been on something there. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for taking the feedback. Oh, one more thing. If there's a way to click, I think if I can get to where I need in two clicks, I think that would probably be most people's tolerance of, unfortunately, the attention span we have, or the ability to think. People don't want to think too much, especially at a tournament. If I'm a coach, I just want to focus on coaching. So right now, I think it takes probably 6 or 7 to kind of navigate the tree. But if there's a way to have the software do most of the thinking and just to make it easier for parents and coaches, I think that'd be much more engaging.
And we're talking, we've been talking through registration, just techniques and ways to make it better, make it more streamlined, like you mentioned there too. Our membership department has a really good grasp on, you know, what was going wrong, the feedback that teams are giving at that check-in, and, you know, what it was like for them to try to get their team in AES. So all that's being heard too. And I think however we can streamline it, we would definitely apply that too. I know we're doing the same thing for our foreign teams too, because it's a lot of paperwork for them too. So we're trying to minimize those clicks on their end too. But yeah, thank you for all the feedback. I really appreciate it, man.
Of course.
Yeah, thank you for that. That was awesome. Want to check in with you on time. Want to respect your time because we're kind of running up here on an hour. But where are you at? We got probably a couple more topics, but we can kind of trim that down if you need to.
Sure. I got about 15 more minutes.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. Well, yeah, appreciate you talking a little bit about yourself, your background, Elevate Yourself, and competing at Opens. But want to jump into, you mentioned at the start of this, your time at BNL, you're at BNL Anaheim and working in capacity with Volleyball World as well. But kind of what was that like? What was that partnership like, and what kind of work were you doing?
Yeah, this is probably my third project for Volleyball World. The first one I did about 4 years ago, they asked me to do a player analysis video of Saeed Maarouf. And so that was kind of my first project for them. And then they were pretty happy with that. Then during the pandemic, they bought the rights to the Italian league. So they asked me to be a commentator. So I did 2 games for them. And so in my experience, it's been a very positive experience with Volleyball World. Not surprisingly, I mean, they're very professional, great communicators, and very clear standards of the branding and the general professionalism they try to maintain. And so that was very similar going to VNL. It was a last minute ask. So I think 3 weeks before the event, they asked me, they reached out last minute, and I couldn't turn it down because it was in the backyard. And this was like a first opportunity to have backstage access. I think that was probably the most appealing, getting courtside access. And when I got there, they were really, really accommodating. All the staff was really great to work with. And I think probably the most, I would say that was probably the most impressive aspect, was that being in an environment where everyone actually was there because they truly wanted to be there. And I know that sounds kind of obvious, but that's very rare in most corporate structures. Like, for an organization that big, people usually come from different careers and are just trying to make good money, have a good job in another career. But everyone I talked to was super excited about, like, I even talked to the cameraman and just picked his brain. And he's like, yeah, I try to, like, the way I sway here, you know, I try to have my heel up about 2 inches just to get that spike. And like, for him to go into that much detail. Yeah. And the people that were managing the ball shaggers for the local teams that would help, they were on it in terms of, hey, remember, if the players don't get their balls, then they're not going to get warmed up. If we don't get warmed up, they're not going to have a good game. So just know that your job is important. Like, just hearing those messages were really, really great. And everybody was super down to earth. And I think that's what drew me more to volleyball compared to basketball. I still love basketball, and I'll still play when I can. I'll still go watch as many games as I can. But basketball, people are a little bit more, there's usually a little bit of a wall. And it's hard to connect, but with volleyball people are just super down and really easy to connect with. Now, in terms of the content opportunities, I think I was very fortunate that they gave me like full access to record anything I wanted. I was one of probably 15 or 20 other media people, and the other media people weren't allowed to record. They were this year there for photography. So I felt very, very blessed to be the only one to be able to record freely in that event. And I think building that trust with them over time, that I was going to promote them in a way that was going to be mutually beneficial for both of us, for both of our organizations. But yeah, that was awesome. And then I think just watching their behind the scenes opportunities. So I had a chance to attend a lot of their morning practices, and it was really cool to see what each team did for their prehab workouts, for their serve and pass, and be able to listen to what the coaches are talking about. For example, like Micah Ma'a and Micah Christensen, just hearing them have discussions with the players on what tempo, what location, what situations, because it's super quiet other than them. In the game, it's really hard to understand what's going on. So that was probably the most fun part as a coach, is sitting in on their morning practices before their evening games.
I love that. Could you talk, a little bit more about that, your kind of takeaways from, you know, as a fan, as a coach, as a player, takeaways from sitting courtside watching the men's national team, you know, in game and at practice?
Yeah. I've always been a huge fan of Matt Anderson, but like to see him up close and have that impact was even more impressive of the command that he has. So there is and also watching Micah Ma'a, I knew he had tons of potential, but I remember 3 years ago listening to his podcast when he was first on the national team. He did serving specialists. He was an outside hitter. Then he was a setter. And he was very aware of what he wanted out of volleyball. And he said on his podcast that, you know, actually just this is really fun for me, and this is what I want out of volleyball. And I think everyone else in the volleyball world wanted him to play for the national team. But he's like, you know, I love grass volleyball a lot more. I really want to build out a system. I'm playing pro. And then I had a chance to interview him at the end of the Bulgaria match. And that was his first full-time start of the VNL at Anaheim. And I brought that up to him at his podcast. And for him, the life-changing experience for him wanting to be a part of USA again was playing in Turkey, was his biggest contract, and then they made it really far in Champions League. And for him, he said, setting is now very new to me. Now, he set at the highest level in college. He was setting professionally, but this is the first time where he was fully dedicated to setter, and this was the highest level he's ever played at. And he said, pretty much, these are like new problems I've never had to solve before, and now it's fun for me again. And then not fun for me in a way like, oh, I want to keep the ball alive, I want to have fun. It was like, these are really interesting problems that I've never had to solve, and I'm really motivated to solve them. And I want to solve that on the national team as well. And so to me, that was just like a affirmation of, as a coach, that at the end of the day, it has to be fun for the players. And also when a player is motivated because they want to like strive for bigger challenges, that's a really powerful tool. Because I'm sure he could have forced himself to be on the national team the last couple of years and just physically keep up and compete. But for him to really want to dive deeper into the setter world and what that looks like, I think has been really paying dividends in his game. And I mean, he's been doing so well. Like I can't say enough about his rise. So that was kind of the biggest eye opening for me, was kind of following his journey and being able to really have deeper insight into his process on his journey on the national team.
I think it'd be a good way to segue and kind of, you know, with this last little bit, touch on your, you know, coaching career a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about the high school team that you coach for right now?
Yeah, I'm Royal Catholic High School in Hayward, California. I coached at another high school for a while, Mistress Housie High School, from 2005 to 2019. Yeah, for a long time. And like part of the reason why I coached at Mistress Housie High School, it was my alma mater. So just having that in there, our programs were never really that strong. And so wanting to come back and help our community and help our athlete community achieve something great. It is a public school. So we are pretty much, we have the athletes that are living in our area. So we had some pretty good success at Mission, but we always got knocked out in the quarterfinals of our playoffs. And I felt like part of that was we just had a limited athlete pool. And we had some pretty good athletes coming in, but because we're restricted with boundaries and our school was mainly an academic magnet, so we would have our super dynamic 5'8" middles competing like at NCS, where the girls at in our sectional playoffs are 6'3", 6'2". And so we always had a little bit limited athlete pool, but also because our school was an academic magnet.
Yeah.
And so the opportunity came up at Moreau Catholic, which was a private school. So there are no boundaries. So anyone can come to our school. And also they always had great athletes. And because they have a strong athletic community, they really value sports in their school. And so that's what always drew me. So the opening came up at Moreau Catholic. And so I just thought, well, maybe figure out, it's a new challenge, a new opportunity to build something. They've had a pretty good girls volleyball team, but they haven't been able to win their sectional playoffs or go beyond that. So I had a chance to coach at some other schools that already had either state titles or sectional titles that reached out to me when I was considering changing schools. But to me, what's more interesting to me, like those would have been great opportunities to coach at those schools and to get amazing athletes, you know, amazing history of the program. But what's more interesting to me is building something and accomplishing things that nobody else has. And I think that kind of goes in line with Elevate Yourself of, you know, we start with something not so great and we build something to be great. So that's where we're at. We're in our third year. We're not doing too hot this season. But I think it's still a long building process. When I first took over, unfortunately, they had different coaches every year just because they had trouble finding a permanent coach. And the previous coaches were just there just to at least keep the program going. So I'm really grateful for them to keep the program alive. But some of the new standards that we've had to implement that have been pretty challenging for our athletes to get used to is video study. So we do video analysis of our performance. We scout the opponent. We do weight training. And then we do skill development with video analysis too. So we have TVs with live feeds where when they pass, they get to watch the TV and then get back in line. So it's been a pretty big learning curve with a lot of the systems we've implemented to make our program better. But also the culture aspects. Culture is a really, really big part of our program. Something as simple as 15 minutes before call time. Like anytime we say a time, you got to be 15 minutes early. We wear the same shirt colors with inspirational messages on the back. Things like that. Like last night, we also had a different, like a cultural heritage night where we celebrated different Latin cultures represented in our school.
Oh, cool.
So just trying to provide like an all encompassing experience, kind of similar to Elevate Yourself, where volleyball is a language through which we empower you to be a great person, great character, great athlete, and all those aspects. So it's been really great in Moreau Catholic because we have a lot of support to do the things that we want to do. At the previous high school, because we're always competing with SAT classes and tutoring, it was hard to ask more than like 2 to 2.5 hours a day because school was a higher priority. Yet I think because at Moreau Catholic, they see the bigger vision of what we're trying to do. And so we have tons of support from the parents, the community, and the administration to live out the vision of what we think a really empowering volleyball program could be.
Man, this has been an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for sharing so much about yourself. I'm viewing this as a part one because we need to have you back on for part two. We have our notes on our end, and we've got so much that we need to touch on.
Questions that we have here. It's really good.
I'd love to come back on. Absolutely. Yeah.
Such great conversation. Thank you so much. For our listeners who who aren't following you right now, where can they find you? And then for your current following, do you have a message for them as we let you go here?
Yeah, I would say the best way to follow me is my YouTube channel, Elevate Yourself. Should be, just put that in the search, should be the first one. And then for Instagram, pretty active on there. You can follow me at Elevate Yourself Official or at Coach Donnie. That's where I post more personal stuff, like photos of my cat.
Hey, cat guys, I'm talking
that's
about.
Right. And my wife converted me. I used to not like cats, but now I love cats. And then for a message to my current followers, thank you for being a part of my journey and just believing in me. I'm always humbled that people would even listen to me or watch me, because for me personally, I'd rather watch Matt Anderson. But for some reason, people watch my open gym videos, and that never gets old. And I try to pass on the message that I've learned from other mentors and other great people in my life. And so I think if we can all continue to pass it on, like, and read a pretty short story before. I'm a huge story guy, so I apologize.
Love this. Yeah, keep going.
One person that I also clicked on my mind to say, like, I want to be like that if I ever get that big. So I was 23, and that's when I snuck into the USA practice. And for me, I was trying to be respectful of their time. I would ask them one question, even though I wanted to ask them 20, I didn't want to ask them more because I didn't want to distract them. But Reed Pretty stayed after and talked to me for 30 minutes. And he asked me where I played.
Storyteller, by the way.
Was that?
Who was also an amazing storyteller, yes. By the way.
That man is an engaging man. Like, you are locked into his universe when you're talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the last person, and him and Lamborn were working on free ball passing, which is awesome. And then, so they're stretching down. He was the last person I was going to ask for to sign my ball. And I was about to walk away, and he asked me questions like, what team do you play for? Oh, cool. What position? And he didn't say, do you play libero? He said, what position? And I said, outside hitter. And he gave me a high five. He's like, that's the best position, baby. And because he's an outside hitter too. And then every time I wanted to not ask and respect his time, he continued the conversation. And I remember thinking, man, he off this gold medalist. I mean, he was about to be a gold medalist in 2 weeks, but he gave me his time and made me feel like I was the most important person just for a moment in his conversation. So I really, when I meet fans and I meet people, I really try to pass that on. So when I talk to people, I really try to ask them how they're doing, get to know them for a moment, because that's what Reed Pretty did for me. So that's the message I want to pass on to my followers, that if you have an experience like that inspires you, try to inspire other people with that same experience.
I love that story. We just had Reed Pretty on 2 episodes ago, so we might have to clip that out and send that to him.
Yes.
If he's not already listening. But I hear a lot of Reed Pretty in you, so that makes sense that he's a big inspiration to you, just the way you storytell and so insightful and engaging in conversation. So, yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that story.
Of course.
Any last words before we let you go here? Anything we left on?
We're wrapping up part one.
Part one, yeah.
Yeah, if I'm already looking forward to part two. I appreciate everything that USA does. And I think this last 10 years has just been a really refreshing evolution of USA volleyball, and really making USA more relevant and more accessible to everyday volleyball people. So great job, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. You as well, man. Keep us
going,
people.
Yep.
Thanks.
All right. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye. So we're going to see a matchup between you and Coach Donnie, Clarence, at the next Open Nationals, or what's going on? You do the schedule, so you can probably make it happen, right?
I don't do the schedule. Yes. It depends on what the season. If I am able to get a team to play, I know they're like damn near, they're a double A team, damn near opens team. So if I can get an open team together, we'll double A.
You can start recruiting right now. Let's go.
Yeah, we'll do.
All right, make it happen.
I actually got a pretty good pool of guys I might reach out to and see what's up, but I don't know.
It was tough.
I'll jump in at libero for you if you need me.
Let's do it.
I mean, I have to dust off the knee pads, you know, find them first. I have no idea where they are. But I'm ready. Let's do it. Let's do it.
I did find it quite challenging to play and also help for the tournament. So we'll see if I even play this year in Columbus. Yeah. But for sure, in 25 in Dallas, I'm finding a way for sure. But yes, I mean, he's amazing, man. Coach Donnie is just like the truth. Overall, just an amazing person. Takes the time to, you know, get to know his fan base and people who ask questions and people who he hears content for. Really breaks things down in a really learnable, detail-oriented fashion when it comes to how he coaches on the boys and girls side of things. And he's just genuine, you know? I loved his background when he had all the anime artwork and the Lin Sani preschool.
Yeah. And Bruce Lee, yeah.
You McCutcheon still might be a little upset, but it's okay. Okay. You know, it happens.
That's so funny that he shared that story. That was great. a great conversation with Coach Donnie, and cool to see everything he's doing in the volleyball community and, you know, even outside of the volleyball community with his YouTube channel. It's not just volleyball. It's very volleyball centric, but it can be applied elsewhere in other sports and life in general too. Our side chat, our podcast side chat, was just going off on how inspired they all felt, and, you know, maybe some tears were shed too in the side chat too, which just hearing them speak, you know, just such a great speaker, very motivational, very inspiring. So yeah, great to get to know Donnie a little bit, you know, through that conversation with him. And like we said, that's just part one. We gotta get him back on to dive deeper into some of those things and talk more. I'm a little bummed we didn't kind of talk a little bit more about Haikyuu, but that gives me time to catch up and avoid spoilers.
They're about to like drop two movies. I don't know when they drop.
What? Oh, sweet.
It's going to be the end of it. I'm kind of bummed.
You think so? Okay.
And then, I don't know. I'm a little upset about that, because like two movies could be like four seasons if you do it right. You know,
I got to catch up. I did watch his episode one reaction, and it was cool to see he had the kind of same reaction that I did about how, it really like teaches volleyball, and it's very, you can tell that someone who knows volleyball probably grew up playing volleyball, wrote or directed the anime, because you even see him like, Hinata like bouncing the ball against the wall, by himself, trying to convince his friends to play volleyball, you know, so that they can have a boys team. And that's just very relatable. You know, that's exactly how it is.
Oh, right. You said Hinata. That's hilarious. Like you're watching Naruto.
Oh, that's his name though, right? Or did I pronounce it weird?
Hinata.
Yeah, Hinata's Naruto. You're right. So many animes in my brain right now. I watch I don't know if you're into One Piece at all, but they came out with the live action Netflix.
I'm like scared to like start One Piece because I'm so far behind, but I see the movie and everything like that. I just gotta pull the character. I guess
so. I was the same way. It's a huge undertaking, and we're getting away from Coach Donnie here. We'll come back. But I watched the live action Netflix series, and it's 8 episodes, super easy watch. And that got me. I'm now trying to go through the actual anime right now too.
Gotcha.
All right. It's going to take a long time, but yeah, back to Coach Donnie.
I've actually like, you know, taking some of his jump training, just like basic introduction videos to apply it to my program. And there is some improvement there too. So like what he is putting out in the universe or Elevate Yourself, it's working. It works, and it is good stuff, you guys. So definitely make sure that if you're a coach and you're looking for some guidance, you're looking for some, you know, structure and some aspects of whatever part of coaching that, you know, you may be struggling in or second guessing, or just maybe curious, look up Elevate Yourself, absolutely, because it'll really help, you know, tie a lot of those loose ends.
Yep.
Sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that in the conversation too, that you were using that kind of stuff and it's working. You applied it and it's working and you're seeing the results. That I think that's just a testament to what he's doing with his content. And yeah, I think with that being said, thank you so much again to Coach Donnie for coming on the show. Again, we're going to bring you back on. We got to talk more about everything that you're doing inside and outside of volleyball, but we appreciate you taking the time to chat with us. And if you're interested, listeners, if you're interested in learning more about Coach Donnie, Elevate Yourself, or just interested in his volleyball strength training, jump training content, you can visit his website, elevateyourself.org, or you can check out his YouTube channel, Elevate Yourself. He's got so many great resources and videos like Clarence mentioned there. And you can also follow him at Elevate Yourself Official on Instagram. But yes, thank you again, Coach Donnie, and look forward to continuing to work with you and build these conversations later down the road. Are we at the events right now? Oh, we are.
It's time. Let's see what's up the vine with Steve-er.
So we have the 2023 USA Volleyball Beach Tour events, including Siesta Key October Beach Regional Qualifier, October 8th in Sarasota, Florida. And the North Texas Region Mad San Volleyball Regional Qualifier, October 15th in my hometown, Plano, Texas. Good luck to everyone competing, and shout out to all the USAB regions for setting up and hosting those events. More details on all upcoming events can be found at usavolleyball.org.
Mm-hmm. Also, remember, registration is still open for the 2023 Boys Mountain Classic Qualifier coming up December 1st through the 3rd in Denver, Colorado at the Denver Convention Center. You have not, or you're still looking for some qualifiers for your team to compete for a chance to win a bid in, sign up for Mountain Classic. You don't want to miss it this year. And registration is also open for our 2024 Salt Lake City Showdown 18s Girls Qualifier from February 9th through the 11th. That is right. If you're looking for an 18s qualifier for your team to compete for a chance to win a bid in, make sure you sign up at usavolleyball.org under our events. It'll take you right to the AES registration page. Now, going to the pro side of things, we have the FIVB Men's Road to Paris Olympic Volleyball Qualifier started on September 9th, going through October 8th in Yoyogi National Stadium, Tokyo, Japan. Wish our men's the best luck as they continue their quest to compete for a qualification berth in Paris. We also have the 2023 Norseca Beach Wandolio Beach, October 5th through the 9th in Wandolio Beach, Dominican Republic. We also have the 2023 Beach Pro Tour Futures Mallorca Women Only, October 18th in Spain. You know, international events have the most interesting names sometimes, you know? They can either be elaborate or just like, this is it, and this is the city it's in, you know?
Yep, yeah. You throw in the city that they're in like three or four times in the name, yeah.
And you still forget everything.
But they're fun to say. They're fun to say. Mallorca, very fun. let's wrap this up. Remember, listeners, you can rate and review, share with friends, family, teammates. It really helps this podcast grow. We just hit, while I was gone, 50,000 downloads. So congratulations to our team for doing that. Everyone in the background, everyone here working hard to promote the podcast. And thank you so much, listeners, for listening and sharing. Like I mentioned, it really helps the podcast grow and keeps us doing this thing. We're at 75 episodes now. We're
75,
25 away from triple digits. But you can check out our video episodes as well on our website and the YouTube channel. We thank you so much for your continued support. Do you know a club that should be featured or a story you'd like us to share? Talk about any guests you'd like us to bring on the podcast. You can email us at the USAB show at usab.org. Leave us feedback and let us know about any future topics you want to hear about. And now, let's close it out. New episodes drop every other week. And until then, thank you so much for listening to the USA Volleyball Show, the official podcast of USA Volleyball.
This has been the USA. USA Volleyball Show with Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson. Produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producer is Laura Fawcett. Our marketing lead is Bree Jaycox. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.